And welcome everybody to episode 46 of Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina. I'm your host, Aaron, and as always, I am here with my fellow host, Christina, and we are here to discuss a main character under 10 as our movie category of choice. I still haven't figured out the exact wording 46 plus weeks into this show, but you know what I mean. Main character under 10 is the requirement for the movie. Probably not the biggest surprise with cinephiles. We went with 1973's Paper Moon. Definitely one of those movies I think people think of when they think of a movie starring a child that isn't a child's movie. Before we get too much further into that, over to my fellow host, Christina. How are you doing this week, darling?
I'm great. I'm back to work now, so life isn't as exciting as it was last week, but it is nice. I missed my kiddos, and some of them actually said they missed me back. So I don't know if that's true, but
the year's early. I believe them still.
Yeah. So everything's good. Happy to talk about this movie, because this has definitely been like low key on my watch list for a few years, just because I felt like their real life story I always thought was entertaining. And it was just one of those when, you know, a 10-year-old wins an Academy Award, it's kind of like you have to watch that movie.
Yeah, it's one that's also been on my list. It could probably qualify for in a few weeks, like our longest, like on our watch list type of movie, which we've had selected since the beginning of the challenge. And just wait a couple more weeks, you will find out what that is. But yeah, we can kind of go into our first impressions about this movie, and then we'll get to our synopsis, of course. Yeah, my first impression and why I didn't watch it sooner was, for one, thought this movie was way older. Did not think it was from 1973. I definitely thought this movie was like from, like, I don't know why, because I kind of know who Tatum O'Neal is, so I know she's like somewhat young still. She's not like ancient, but like I was like, this movie's from the 50s, 60s. It's definitely older, and so I didn't realize it was 1973.
I don't know why I was under that impression too, where I was like, this movie was definitely made in like the 40s or 50s. Like, this is an old movie. And then when I was like, 1973, like freaking Randy Quaid is in this movie.
Right. Yeah. Randy Quaid is in a lot of Peter Bogdanovich movies. So like, he was like a big player for Peter Bogdanovich. Yeah. It's funny.
Like at one point I was like, is that Cousin Eddie? And I was like, yeah, right. It does make sense, because this really is from 1973. Like, I really am not watching a movie that was made in 1947.
Right. Which is right away a testament to Peter Bogdanovich as a director. His complete intention with this movie being black and white, how it's presented, was to look like a movie in the Depression era. So when you see the stills, you know, you see the movie mentioned in an internet article, you look at the image, it looks like an image from the 30s. It's really, again, props. 1970s, just the best decade of filmmaking, in my opinion. And I think you've said that also, as we've kind of talked about.
The more I watch movies from the 70s, the more I feel bad for myself that I have to do the 2000s and the 2010s. Because
it is tough once you start seeing classics like this. They are for a reason. But yeah, I mean, so that it's just shocking, this movie. Usually when I'm talking about movies being and how long ago they were, I'm like, I can't believe this movie came out that long ago. I can't believe this movie's only under 50 years old. It seems like it's 70, 80 years old.
Yeah.
And so in a very good way, in a classic way. But yeah, I just kind of assumed this was going to be, you know, just kind of like an old timey classic Hollywood type of story that, like, you know, with a kid and a dad like going through the country. I didn't really know much about it other than that. I didn't know they're con people. I didn't know anything. That's all I knew about it. I just was like, it's a kid, a dad and their kid going through it with like a convertible through the country. That was all I knew. What was like kind of your impressions about this?
Yeah, I just knew that they were real life father and daughter. So I just assumed they were playing father and daughter in the movie. And I just knew that there was just some controversy, because obviously this was her getting into Hollywood. Like, I knew that there was like personal turmoil to this. And like, this is kind of where it all started. Like, I believe, you know, she eventually got into drugs. Like, maybe there was some mistreatment of her like on the set and things like that. So it was like, this was just like a big deal. It's like a personal story of hers. And I feel like I've watched like documentaries on her like randomly, like on a VH1 show at some point. So that was always like my draw to this. But I never really just wanted to be like, I'm just going to sit down and watch this movie, because at the end of the day, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't actually know what it was about until I watched it.
Yeah. I really just assumed it was going to be a boring old movie and I'd get to it eventually, but it wasn't going to take risks or be like edgy or like, you know, do think outside of, and I was wrong. I'll say that much right off the bat. But before we get much further, IMDb has a synopsis for us to rate, and that's what we're going to do.
During the Great Depression, a con man finds himself saddled with a young girl who may or may not be his daughter, and the two forge an unlikely partnership.
All right, 3.5 out of 5. That's pretty high rating for me. What do you think?
I mean, they're in the Great Depression.
Yeah, yeah. Might have been his daughter. Pretty sure it was his daughter. Seemed like that was pretty confirmed.
The idea that it is. That makes my heart happy.
Yeah, and like, why else would he have made this many concessions for this like little girl, not gotten rid of her when he could have? Like, I guess she was serving a purpose and was making better at his job and better at conning than he was. But yeah, I give this about a 3.5 out of 5. I do think it leads you to think that the may or may not be his daughter is a bigger storyline than it really is. It's kind of a storyline we make a bigger deal than they do in the movie. I kind of like that. But yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up. And if I would have read that, I would have thought it was pretty, you know, straight-laced still. I would have been like, okay, like, I know she's a con artist, but are they really going to show her doing any cons? Which they definitely do.
Well, I mean, it starts off like at her mother's funeral.
Yeah, we start at the funeral.
And it's just like, okay, but we, you know, we don't know who really died. And then it's like, okay, we figure out that it's her mom. And then like this guy just shows up and he's just like, I'm just here to pay my respects. Like deuces. Like I've never, like we talk about a drive-by. I mean, I know people do that where they literally just come in, walk up, say hello and dip. But I was like, damn.
Yeah.
You like chucked flowers on the grave and was like, see ya, bitch. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. was ready to dip out. Mm-hmm. But I really loved that they were like looking at him like, man, you just like have her jaw. Like you guys have the same jaw. And I just feel like that was such a compelling argument because for this little girl that it's like, I kind of know my mom's a hussy. Mm-hmm. I've met a bunch of guys before, but nobody's ever really said I looked like any of them.
Yep.
So it was just like this, I don't know. I liked that because I think it's like this cute thing. I don't know. Genetics is cool to me. Like when I see it, especially like with my students where it's like some of my kids like are identical and other ones, I was like, oh, that's like your sibling. And then like you'll see their parents on parent conferences and you're like, oh, you look like her. You look like him. Mm-hmm. And it was cool because I don't think they really do look alike. So she must look like her mom in real life because obviously this was her genetic father. And I didn't mm-hmm. really think they looked that similar. So it like mm-hmm. still played off well where it's like, yeah, they look a little bit, but still not enough. Or like it was believable that he wasn't her dad.
Yeah, or like they didn't know at least. Right. You didn't know for sure if he was or not. Yeah, and I guess it's not really the point of the movie to ask whether or not it is actually father-daughter. It's just not that kind of movie. I do think it is, and it's just like, why would you cast a father-daughter and things like that? I'm sure there's some really cool behind-the-scenes kind of story of how it got started because Tatum O'Neal was 8 years old when she was casted in this movie. And she has like a deeper voice than Ryan O'Neal, though. It's kind of hilarious. And she's smoking cigarettes on the scene and like pulling up.
Real?
I do think that was real. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Which is just like, you know, the 70s, pre cancellation era filmmaking. But yeah, I do think it was real. I know that becoming a star at 9 years old had to have some kind of serious psychological repercussions on Tatum O'Neal. I know she had some substance issues growing up as well. You know, you grow up quickly when you're under the public eye of Hollywood like this. But yeah, it starts at the funeral. From the funeral, we kind of get to where he's got to take her to go back to where she's exactly?
Her aunt and uncle. So she needs to go live with her. It's her mother's sister and they live in St. Joe, Missouri. And he kind of was like, oh, I'm going to head that way. And they're like, okay, thanks, random guy that banged the dead person. Take the kid. Because they're under the impression that he's just going to drive her there. He's on his way there anyway.
Yep.
And then, you know, he wants to drop her off at the train station. And basically we find out that he's a con man. And then we find out that she's a bigger con artist than he is. Mm-hmm. She's the mastermind. I mean, she's brilliant, which is another way to be like, maybe you guys are related if you guys think alike, because where else would she have like gotten these instincts from?
Yep, exactly. I agree 100%. And from there, we get to where the main characters that we're following around for this whole movie is Ryan and Tatum. And Ryan is named Moses
Prey. And she Moses, calls him Mose.
Yeah, known as Mose. Moses Prey. He's a deluxe Bible salesman. I mean, this is just straight out of, I watched The Simpsons growing up a lot. Like, I mean, there was like a Bible salesman, Gil, the Bible salesman or whatever in The Simpsons. It's just like, this has been parodied through kind of Hollywood and media for so long that this is almost like hackwood. It's like, he's got a con. He follows the obituaries, looks up in the obituaries, the names, goes to these people's houses, and then claims that the person who's recently died had ordered this deluxe Bible with their name printed in it and then names a price kind of based on the house. Usually he goes with like $8, I think. And, you know, almost every time it works, they show kind of some different scenarios, one of which has like a sheriff's brother answer the door and he's like super skeptical. I mean, it's just about a perfect way to show very quickly, this guy is just like a shitty con man from
it's so brilliant. I mean, it's shitty that he's basically preying on people's grief, but it's so good. And she's so good because she's the one that reads the situations and ups the price.
Like, she goes way higher than he does. Like, she's like, he's asking for like $4 to $6 to $8, which is a ton for back then too, I'm sure. And she's like 22, 24. She sees like Crystal in the back. She's like $28 and they don't blink. These people don't blink and she knows it. And it's just over and over throughout the movie, there's examples of particularly Tatum O'Neal's character, Addie, who won Best Supporting Actress. Well, let's just say that's ridiculous right off the bat. She was the lead actress. She's in like every scene of the movie more than most. Yeah, she's a star. She's the reason this movie is still watched 50 years later the way it is. And I mean, she's just so great at using her situation, her appearance in every situation to the best. My favorite scene or con of hers is the $20 con where it says happy birthday in there where her...
Oh my God, that was so good.
It's the two of them working together and like she's the cashier is just perfect as it's like clueless, like, oh no, you gave me and she's just, it's just like, how would that con not work every single time back then, especially? How would it not? There's not cameras. It's just like, how would that not work every time? Your father goes in first, gives the $20 with the, they don't notice. And then she just says, that's my 20 for my birthday. It's like, then the manager comes out. It's just like so brilliant to use your appearance, who you are, against the situation. Like, and it's just that you're not used to seeing that a kid be aware of it. You're used to seeing adults be aware of their positions or their appearances and using them, not the kid. It's just brilliant.
And even like her quick talking when she was at the carnival and she would trade the guy out for the change and she kept like changing him out and kept making $5. Mm-hmm. Like, you do it when you talk quickly and you distract and it's somebody that has a big wad of cash and they just want to get rid of you and you just kind of, and it's a couple dollars here or there, but if you do it a bunch of times, you start getting a lot of dollars. So it's like she, in my personal opinion, he started out with a good plan and she just took him to another level. I mean, it's almost like any good heist movie where it's like you have the guy with the plan and then he finds somebody that makes him even better. It just so happens that this time it was a 9-year-old.
Yeah, I really feel like this family is the same family tree as Howard from Uncut Gems. Just like they're going to keep conning until they get caught and the con's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. There is no winning. Even for young Addie, like this 9-year-old, you're like, oh, she's so innocent. She's not that innocent. And she's got a taste for the con from this age. It's never going to go away. She's going to be this person her entire life.
And she's only going to get better at it.
Or get caught or killed. The things that happen.
She's that good, though. I don't think that would happen. I think if they did this movie, if we followed up, if we did Paper Moon 2.
Right, but we're getting into... we're getting into... She's, like, you know, sneaking booze to the Germans or... I don't know. She's going to get into some World War II. You know, the stakes are only going to get higher. But I would have watched the Paper Moon 2.
How did you feel about her being obsessed with FDR?
Weird. Like, I guess it's like me. Yeah. What'd she call him? Did she call him Freddie at one point? Frankie.
He's like, his name is Franklin.
It's just like, you know, any kid who has their like pop star obsessions, except back in the Great Depression, your pop star obsession was who came up with the Economic New Deal and Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Well, didn't he do the fireside chats too? So like that was
like, it's like
a few times. So
yep, radio star. Exactly. Yeah. Where do we want to, I know I kind of jumped ahead talking about one of my favorite, but where we want to kind of go next, we get introduced with the original Bible.
Yeah, role. I mean, basically, we see them do their cons, and they're traveling from place to place, and they're staying at different motels. He's a sleaze. Like, they go to that carnival, and he keeps, like, ditching her for the, like, burlesque show. But I guess, like, the saddest part of the whole movie is he never took his picture with her in the paper moon, like he promised her he would.
Yep.
Which that circles back towards the end of the movie that, you know, she took the picture by herself. We, you know, we do a bunch of cons, but then he meets Trixie.
Yeah, let's go to Trixie, played by Madeline Kahn, I believe, who also was nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Madeline Kahn and Tamara Neal were.
Well, like, Madeline Kahn was actually the supporting actress in this movie, so that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, I think that Tatum could have won for lead based on who I looked at in the lead also. But that's, but yeah, we can meet Trixie. Go ahead. Sorry, I had to cut you off.
So yeah, I mean, it, you know, it's a typical story. You know, he's a man. He has needs, meets this woman who seems easy. And then he decides that, you know, they're coming with him. And Addie wants no part of this. They got into the whole squabble about, like, how Addie wants to sit in the front seat and now she refuses to go anywhere. That was a good monologue from Madeline, from Trixie, just being like trying to sway with her. Basically, like, listen, you little bitch, like, you're sitting in the back.
Yep. It's like the stepmom and the daughter now.
Yes. This family, it's very this parent trap.
Mm-hmm. This rushed together family now having the new woman come in after they've just started to bond and get close. And she feels like she has her place of authority now being replaced by this hussy Trixie, who is from the tent? Like, I forgot what the name of the tent.
Pick her up from, like, that burlesque show or whatever that was. But like, she's just coming with us now. Because I mean, in the beginning of the movie, he went to go drop her off at the train because he was like, I'm going to take her to St. Joe, Missouri, and then tries to just drop her off. And she cons him like, yo, you owe me $200 because you swindled the guy. I killed my mom.
Exactly.
So he reluctantly takes her, and that's where we finally start to see the bonding happen. And, like, you know, he sees, like, okay, this girl's making us a lot of money. Like, we're actually a good team.
Mm-hmm.
But he, you know, needs to get laid. So enter Trixie, and Addie is basically like, I'm having no part of this. So
And she's like,
up with Trixie's, I guess, like, nursemaid, or I don't know what, helper. I don't
know. Yeah. Yep. I forget who. I don't think she knows how old she is when she asks her how old she is. She's like, I don't know. I'm like 16 or something. She does it.
She's like, definitely a teenager. Her name was Imogen. She's played by PJ Johnson.
She's great too.
Yeah. She was Trixie's, I don't know, personal assistant. But, you know, Addie's like, listen, like, they come up with the greatest con because she noticed that the clerk at the hotel liked Trixie. And so they just put the plan in motion. Like, I'm getting rid of this bitch and I'll get you enough money that you can go home.
Mm-hmm.
I do love it though, when they set up the whole con to have Moses walk in on them together in bed, that Imogen's like, listen, he's going to kill them. Like, he's definitely going to kill them. And she's like, he's not going to kill them. She's like, oh, no, no. Where I come from, if a man comes home and finds another man in bed with his wife, he takes him out back and finds his double-sided axe and chops him up and uses it for firewood. Like, damn, where do you live, girl? You're trying to get back there? I would not try to get back there.
Yeah, Imogen, don't fuck around. She do not fuck around. Yeah, but it ends up working out just fine for them. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of the amazing thing is that for all the cons, most of them work out, except when they kind of start to raise the stakes to the booze.
Right. So it's basically, it's following Uncut Gems without all of the anxiety and stress, where it's like, we see that these guys are great con artists. And I can see where the addiction comes from, because when you're never losing, why would you stop? Why wouldn't you try to push the limit as much as you can? So they swindle the bootlegger and get all of this whiskey and then wind up selling it to the sheriff's brother, and now they're in deep shit.
Did you notice the sheriff and the sheriff's brother were played by the same person? That was kind of a clever little casting. The brother is played by the same person as the sheriff.
Oh, I did not notice that. I must have missed that. I thought the brother was the other.
I'm pretty sure that the sheriff and the brother, if not, we're just gonna edit this out, but check right now. I'm pretty sure they were played by the same person.
Me see.
I'll check on
everybody. Yes, he was. Deputy Hardin and Jess Hardin were played. So the deputy was played by the same person.
So just another bit of clever casting for the deputy and the brother to be played by the same person. Just kind of a clever little bit of casting there. And so, we just see over and over what they could have kept doing the Bible thing. City after city, town after town, people aren't going to stop dying. Bibles aren't going to stop getting sold. And they were raising the amount. They were making plans. But like any con, like any compulsive types of people, they got to keep raising the stakes. It gets to the stake of the booze. They meet with, who is this guy? Just a bootlegger?
These yeah, are... She spotted him and was like, this guy's got a wad of money. I think we should try to try to work with him or steal it from him or whatever it is. They find out that he's selling the booze and they get it. And then they go to sell it and sell it to the wrong person. And now they're, you know, now they're in the police station and they're getting interrogated. Yep. And, you know, Moses has to hold his hands up and they're doing the intimidation tactics. And she just like, she reads the room. I mean, she was smart enough to hide the money, not only under her hat, but literally within the seams of her hat. So they, when they searched her stuff and they searched her, they never found it. They searched him and didn't find the money, obviously, because she had it. I mean, and she was so slick to even just scratch her face to point to where she had it. I mean, they zoom into it. There's parts of this movie that are just so just brilliantly shot and just like little nuances in it that just really like she really was great in this. Like even just going back to the part where like you can tell she misses her mom, where she's just looking at pictures and tries to pose like her. She definitely has like insecurities about her appearance. Because she did look very boyish at points and got very offended when someone thought she was a boy.
She's got the deeper voice for a little girl.
She's got the short hair. She kept wearing the overalls.
Yeah.
There were parts where she didn't look like a boy.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really, yeah, very modern.
She reminded me of Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird, where she has like, you know, she doesn't have a lot of girly tendencies, which is fine.
Yeah.
But like, that's why people didn't realize you were a girl, especially back then. Everything was like, women wore dresses and men wore pants, and that's what it was.
Yep.
But the police station was great. And then finally she's like, okay, like, can I get my stuff, please? Like, I'm just a cute, innocent little girl. Realizes that the car key is right there, snatches that up. Daddy, I need to use this shit house. And then basically tricks them into being like, I need to go with my daddy to go to the bathroom. And that's it. That's where they make their escape. Run! Yep. And they just start running. And they get in the car. And now it's this high speed. And I'm using air quotes, everyone, because this is 1924. This movie's taking place in. And
right.
They're not going very fast.
No, it's,
he's shit in the bed. And she's going all over the place. And she's like, we're going to make it. And I was like, oh my God, are they going to make it? I was like, is this how this movie's going to end? Because I didn't know how much time was left.
Right.
I was like, they're going to get caught. This is over. Like something bad. One of them's going to die. Like I definitely thought somebody was going to die. I'm like, this is terrible. I'm like these poor people, but they make it free. And then this is where we run into a random farm. Randy Quaid makes his appearance and they're going to wrestle.
They do wrestle. It's weird wrestling rules. I don't know what the rules were, but like Ryan just kind of kicks him in the face and wins.
Yeah. I mean, as someone, you watch UFC and MMA, what are the wrestling rules? Like,
I mean, I don't know about backcountry wrestling, but it just seems like usually if you're wrestling, you're not supposed to strike. And it just seems like it was cheating there. And in a way that most people, one or the other, seems like they would cheat in that way if there was wrestling matches that way. And I guess this just kind of an example of the country bumpkin being taken by the big city slicker. It's just like, why wouldn't you kick him in the face if you can do that, though? Because his face is right there. It's like, bend over and just wait.
Yeah, it was a ballsy move because Randy Quaid's character, Leroy, was not alone. He was surrounded by, like, his uncle and his, like, three or four brothers. So
and they were armed, I assume, or it was, like, implied that they were.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how this worked. This one was kind of the least convincing con they did just because it's like, that one wouldn't work. It's like, they wouldn't just let you do that.
Yeah, I just feel like it's very ballsy to threaten someone that's in a group, kick them in the face, and then the whole group was like, okay, I guess you win the bet. We'll swap cars.
Well, I think they didn't want their family member to win because he was going to, like, keep this crappy truck and, like, not keep the new fancy car. And, like, basically the only reason they wanted to switch was so that they get the cops off their tail. Like, otherwise it was completely unfair trade and the farmers are actually going to get the better end of it. So I think maybe that's why they're kind of okay with their side getting cheated because they wanted to lose it anyways to get the, because all that happened with the loss was they allow the swap to happen. That's it. So it's just, maybe that, I guess that's what we're, that's one of the weaker aspects of the concept or it's shown or
just like,
it's kind of a hand wavy.
Yeah, the swap just should have been done straight up. The whole wrestling
part. Yeah, it was kind of like an attempt at comedy, I think, which I wouldn't say this movie's very funny. I wouldn't say the comedy aspects. There's awkward situations that are funny, but when it tries to be funny, like slapstick, like here, doesn't work. I'll say that.
Also, it seems like he's trying to prove that like he can handle himself and he's not just this like city boy that's just a con artist.
But he just cheats.
Clearly, he can't fight very well, as we
see. He can't wrestle.
Yeah. So
Yeah, weird part. One of the weaker aspects. Yeah. But it is Randy Quaid, at least, in here. So that's
That was weird. So they make the trade, and now they have this shitty car. They make it to Missouri. They think all is well. You know, they're in St. Joe. They have their hotel room, and they got like a silver mine lined up. They have There's big dreams, aspirations. She wants a house, a piano. I mean, you're like, oh my god, is this gonna be again? I really should pause the movie sometimes and see how much time is left, but I don't want to ruin it for myself.
No, you don't want to do that. Yeah, you gotta just kind of wonder.
We're gonna get such a happy ending. Like, look at these con artists that are gonna be
this epic conclusion. Yeah, just
and then he walks out of the hotel and sees that the cops from Kansas did in fact cross over state lines, and they are there. You know, and he's like, we can arrest me, and they're like, we can't, but we can, you know, make your life more difficult. And you know, they start chasing on foot and the car, and I thought he was gonna die. That's how I thought the movie was gonna end. I thought he was gonna die and she was gonna find him, and like she was gonna have to figure out how to be on her own, and I thought that was gonna be the movie.
I thought we were heading for a very, very dark ending.
I was like, this movie's been delightful, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm about to get my heart broken. So you definitely thought he was going to die too?
Yeah, and I'm not convinced that he didn't die maybe soon after that, because it's just, this is just one of these Howard Uncut Gems types of situations. They're going to keep doing it until they lose.
Right.
So even though it kind of has somewhat of a hopeful ending that we're about to get to, I just think it was a delay of the inevitable, which was these con artists are going to get caught, and it's going to be at such high stakes that it's going to be life or death.
So eventually he does get the crap kicked out of him, which if you just wrestled somebody to prove a point and you can kick him in the face and you are like winking at Addie being like, see, I can fight. I can take care of myself. I mean, I don't know where your wrestling abilities were when you got your ass kicked by two dudes.
Yeah. When they're when they're also ready to punch. It's so amazing how much harder it is.
Yeah.
Someone just thinks it's a wrestling match.
Yeah. But they, you know, they mug him. They take all of his money. They beat him up a little bit and just kind of let him know that they're not okay with it. So he misses his meeting. And basically is like, listen, we're done. Like, it's time for you to go now, because he never really wanted to be with her anyway. They ran their cons, and now he's like, we don't have any money. And I think deep down he knew that he couldn't support her, couldn't bring her with him. And I think it's almost a noble thing. Like, I think it seems like it was the selfish thing of like, finally I can get rid of you. But I think part of him was like, I can't take care of you right now, so you can't come with me anymore. And he wasn't in good shape.
Yeah. He knew he was on a downfall. He didn't want to bring her with him. Maybe taking care of his daughter for the first time. Finally.
So he drops her off at the house. And this part, I almost cried.
Yeah. Okay.
This part was so, when he goes to drop her off and she's like, you're not going to walk me to the door? You know, like, how much closer I need to get? And then when she kind of like goes through like all the men she's met, well, I thought this guy could have been my pa, because, you know, the way he put his hand on my shoulder and he would give me the free candies, or I thought this guy could have been my pa because of this reason. And then, but you know, none of them have the same jaw as me. And that's when I was like, oh, like it was something that she clung to the whole movie, because that was like the very beginning of the movie and it was never really mentioned. And they did the daddy daughter con the whole time. She never really brought it up again until the end of like, I really do. Like, I think that was just her saying like, I think you're my dad. And like, I just want you to admit that you are my dad, because I really, really think that you are. Like, we get along. We have these good instincts. We kind of look like, I feel like you're my dad. And it like, we never get the satisfaction of him admitting it. I don't know if he knows for sure. It's not like there's going to be a DNA test.
Seemed like there was a during the discussion when they kind of talked about it and the timing of everything, it did seem like he was acknowledging how it was possible.
Yeah. So, but like, I'm sure he doesn't know. He's a drifter. He comes in, you know, he's with all these different ladies. He you know, gets drunk a lot. We saw him drunk a few times. So it's not like he knows exactly when it would have happened anyway. But so she goes, finally is with her aunt and uncle, who are like, oh my God, I can't believe it's taking you this long. And then two movies in a row, we have kids just running with their suitcases down the dirt road. I was like, man, look at this secondhand line ending.
Yep. Very secondhand line-esque.
Where she doesn't want the stability, where she's well fed and well dressed and has her own bed and has a good home. She wants to be with him. And I don't know if she deep down wanted to be with her dad, or if she wanted the lifestyle of the con, that like she was addicted to conning people and was into that lifestyle.
Yeah.
What do you think her motivations were at the end for wanting to go back with him?
I think it always is going to be the con. She was not maybe very well, you know, pointing out the jaw, and maybe in a very meta way, she was conning us by the end into being convinced that it was her dad, and just being like, the jaw. Like, maybe he wasn't. Maybe this was her con and her way of getting her life the way she wanted, which was kind of with this way of a con by way of being this guy's daughter. That's a life of con in that way. So maybe she was conning us. Maybe that in fact is my theory for Paper Moon, is that she was conning us the whole time into believing that she was his daughter.
Ooh.
Maybe she wasn't.
So I think it tug on his heartstrings because she left him the picture that she took where it was just her. You know, he definitely hesitated and I think was sad that they parted. And then, you know, they reunite at the end and on to their next adventure.
Looney Tunes. Yeah, Looney Tunes. Yeah. Like, I saw it was the end of a Looney Tunes episode. I was, as the guy who likes the downer sad endings, I was pleasantly surprised by this optimistic, could there be a sequel ending? Which obviously they didn't think about that back in the 70s. They just allowed stories to be told. But if this was 2020, it would have gotten a sequel on Netflix.
I mean, it still could use this. I don't even know if Ryan O'Neal's alive. I probably should have looked that up. But I think we should have a sequel. But really, we don't need him in the movie. Let's just let Addie take it over. Yep, Tatum.
You surprise the role girl. Grandma Addie with the grandchildren out at like an antique roadshow.
Yeah, and she's just doing, you know, her next con and helping, you know, she has kids and her grandkids and it's a family of con artists and they're just learning the ways. That's a Paper Moon 2, baby. Sign me up. That's the movie I need to see.
I love it. I think that leads us to our conclusion here. We can wrap it up. I usually kind of have an idea of who's going to like the movie a little less or more than the other. I might be a tie. So we'll go ahead and go to you first for the rating.
I really enjoyed this movie. This is something, like I said earlier in the podcast, that this has just been low key on my watch list for actually a few years now. When you suggested it to me, I was like, absolutely, that's the one I want to watch. Mm-hmm. We just fitted in the theme. I think we cheated a little bit because she was 9 when she filmed it. She might have been 10 by the time it released, but I don't care. I'm counting.
No, in this case.
So this is just a movie I've wanted to see for a while. I thought her personal story was always something that broke my heart a little bit, to see somebody this talented kind of get sucked into the business and things like that and you know, mistreated within Hollywood. I thought this movie was enjoyable. Like, there were just delightful moments that tugged at your heartstrings. I thought her performance was great. I don't know if I would have said Academy Award winning. I haven't seen the other movies to compare. I definitely think she got slighted by Best Supporting. She's clearly the lead in this movie. But the way this is directed, you don't feel like this movie came out in the 70s. You are totally immersed in the set, in the costumes. You feel like this movie was made in the 20s. It's set in the 20s. And you feel like that's exactly how this... It feels that way. It looks that way. Even I feel like the grain on the camera looks like it was not made in the 70s. So it totally transports you. The acting was great. The story was great. I'm giving this a 4.5. I really, really liked this movie a lot.
Wow. Yeah, everything you said of the above, I don't have a problem with the Oscar. The category is fine, too. I looked at the lead actresses, and honestly, I thought supporting was a tougher category that year. Maybe that's ignorance on my end. But either way, I'm fine with that. Great performances. The music, again, did not feel like a 70s movie. It got very dark at points. You know, the whole Cousin Eddie thing was weird. I could have done without that section of the movie. And it was still a quick movie, so it wasn't a pacing thing. It was just kind of how that worked was a little bit odd. But other than that, I mean, for the most part, I had a great time. I'd enjoy revisiting this. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Didn't quite love it as much as you, but, you know, there's just a couple things holding it back from being like an absolute classic to me. But at the same point, I had a great time all the way through. 4.25 out of 5 average. That's one of our top rated movies of the year. And it leads us into next week. We actually discussed before getting on kind of how John Hughes is someone we're kind of okay on. We're fine with Breakfast Club. Home Alone's great, but we're not going to talk about Home Alone. We're coming up on Thanksgiving. This is the unofficial Thanksgiving movie. It's Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. John Candy, Steve Martin. I've seen it a few times. Christina has never. It's pretty great movie. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Think between the two of us, we've seen every John Hughes movie, so it was going to be a repeat for somebody. At least the ones he's directed, if we're going to stick with the directed one. So This one came highly recommended also by our friend Bill. So this is going to be a fun watch. I'm looking forward to it. We have a couple of exciting episodes left in the year with at least categories and guests lined up. So I'm excited for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and the rest of the year coming up because we are almost done.
Yeah, this has been an absolute blast. The amount of movies we've gotten to see. You know, while some have been repeats, there's just been all the conversations really have been top notch aside from Deep Blue Sea. You know, we all got to have one bad episode. Sorry, Deep Blue Sea. That was it. But yeah, it's been a blast. It's, you know, crazy coming up at the end here and we'll figure out going forward what we're exactly doing. But I can tell you, enjoy these last few episodes in this form of digesting cinema because this will not be repeated next year. So these will always be here to come back to. I think for the most part, they're revisable and pre-evergreen. So you can visit these at any point when you do come to these movies if you haven't. But yeah, this has been a great experience. Looking forward to the last few weeks. And yeah, talking about the unofficial Thanksgiving movie of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles next week on the program here. Christina, is anything coming up for you this upcoming week?
No, we're just living the dream. I believe the stars are still alive in the singles tournament because Janine is amazing. Throwing it out there, people. I don't know. Hope you got your tickets to Spectacular. Just saying. Just saying.
What a historic.
You know, and also because Aaron and I might be there. So we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Digesting Cinema Live. Looking to get our expo. Just kidding. Yeah. I'm not going to say that. But yeah, nothing coming up for me. Same old, same old. But yeah, for Aaron, for Christina, keep digesting cinema out there and keep looking at those paper moons.
That was your best one.